And now, from the mysterious studios of Skybird Radio International and imaginary stations, it's time for Radio Ace! Oh man, this is going to be weirder than Mystery Science Radio 3000.
And now, the EdgeEc Factory presents the amazing recorded adventures of Floating Flash Frizzbone. Flash Frizzbone, the most transient radio personality in the universe. Floating Flash Frizzbone, who, endowed with the ability to change formats in the middle of an ARB sweep, just can't manage to keep a job. You'll remember last time, our hero, Floating Flash Frizzbone, was hired at WESE, Edison 78, an all-oldies station in Florida. What Flash didn't know when he applied for work at the station was that when they say oldies, they mean oldies. Edison 78 is programming to listeners 85 years of age and up. But since he was the only applicant, Flash was hired to replace Old Harry, who'd been doing mid-mornings since the early 1920s, a tough act to follow. To complicate things, Flash has been ordered not to talk, since his youthful voice might disturb the listeners accustomed to Harry's smooth, if somewhat shaky, delivery. As we tune in this month, Flash is being shown the ropes, not to mention the cranks and knife switches, by veteran Edison 78 morning man Victor Windup. It's sign-on in Peaceful Retirement Village. Let's listen.
Not really much of a board. I mean, look what you got there. Just one knob and two switches. I mean, what kind of board is that?
Well, Flash.
Flash.
We don't need any of that fancy stuff.
Huh?
They tried to get us to use one of those newfangled wire recorders, you know.
Yeah?
They're nothing but trouble, always breaking down.
So what do you use? Mm.
Our spots are all recorded on these cylinders here.
Why?
The finest beeswax. We get really good tone. Can't tell it from the original.
You run a lot of spots in the morning, do you?
Oh, sure. Mornings are pretty heavy. Always have been.
Yeah?
Many of the sponsors haven't changed their copy for 40 years.
40 years?
Repetition. That's what gets him. Hold on here. The anthem's ending. I'll do the sign-on. Now, you watch.
Yeah.
You talk into this horn on top of the board.
Uh-huh.
And you have to turn the toggle when it's time to talk.
Get there.
It's just about time to talk.
And as Flash silently watches on, Victor deftly throws the switch and talks into the shiny brass horn that is Edison 78's only microphone.
This is Edison 78. Now commencing, we broadcast with almost 100 watts to the listeners of Retirement Village, Florida. Today's program, as always, will consist of your favorite old-time...
Well, you've got to admit, it looks pretty bleak for Flash. He's used to a lot more modern equipment and a bit more up-to-date playlist. I mean, nothing here but brittle, thick shellac platters from 1923. But as he watches the master at work, he gains real respect and a feel for the format.
Finally in the sports, Manny Arbutus is elected the champion of all shuffleboard players at the Old Inn. Congratulations, Manny. Don't forget, there's bingo tonight at the Inn. That's the sports. I'm Victor Windup. More music after this. So stop down today and drive one away. A Bob Jones Hupmobile. Get behind the wheel of a Bob Jones Hupmobile. You'll be glad you did. Edison 78. Get out the old ukulele and play along with Victor Windup on Edison 78.
Gosh, Mr. Windup.
Oh, you can call me Vic. Flush.
Flash. Whatever. Listen, you know, you really run a tight board. You got a good sound here. When I first sat down and saw all this old crummy equipment, I thought this was going to be a real bummer of a station. But I really dig the music, and you really run a tight ship.
Well, Flash, you know,
we've been doing this a long time.
Yeah?
And you do anything a long time, sooner or later you're going to get it right. Now, yeah. Listen, it's about time for you to take the board yourself here.
Oh,
why don't you crank up turntable number two there?
Like this?
Yes, just crank it up like that.
Okay.
And I'll get out of the chair. Now, you sit down.
Oh, boy.
Okay, now listen, you can't talk, but you can do everything else. You can play the jingles, yeah. You can cue up the records, and be sure and play all the spots on the log.
Oh, sure.
I'm going to go get some coffee, and I'll see you later, Flush.
Oh, boy, my own show.
And soon, Flash is filled with the excitement that only comes from being on the board at a live radio station. And he finds that there's just as much excitement in those old discs as any punk album. And soon, he's tapping out the rhythms and bouncing in time with the hot music.
We've got music that don't make you sick on Edison 78.
Well, Flash is really having a good time. He can't remember when he's been so happy on the air. Except for one thing. If only he could talk. If only he could say something or do something to put his personality in the program. He ponders, and he ponders, until... And Flash starts rummaging around in his briefcase looking for what? Flash wouldn't break format, would he? Certainly he wouldn't do anything to jeopardize his gig at Edison 78.
Where did I put it?
What is he looking for in the briefcase? And what about Elma Gluck? Join us next time for another thrill-a-minute episode of Floating Flash Frisbone Radio Ace! The Adventures of Floating Flash Frisbone are recorded in Marquette, Michigan, at the facilities of Studio B.
If it's strange and cool music, you'll hear it on Radio Ace. Hi, this is DJ Frederick from Imaginary Stations, and we try to be the most interactive station on shortwave. You can send your reception reports to imaginarystations@gmail.com. That's imaginarystations@gmail.com. We send out a monthly EQSL that encompasses all of the reception reports that you have sent. We're also happy to correspond by mail, so you can join our Pen Pal Club. Email us for more information. There's also a Facebook group. Just search for Imaginary Stations Shortwave on Facebook, where you can stay up to date on the latest broadcasts and all the happenings from Skybird Studios. We're trying to make shortwave listening fun again. Radio connects us all.
Far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun. Orbiting this at a distance of roughly 90 million miles is an utterly insignificant little blue-green planet whose ape-descended life forms are so amazingly primitive that they still think digital watches are a pretty neat idea. This planet has, or had, a problem, which was this. Most of the people living on it were unhappy for pretty much of the time. Many solutions were suggested for this problem, but most of these were largely concerned with the movements of small green pieces of paper. Which is odd, because on the whole, it wasn't the small green pieces of paper that were unhappy. And so the problem remained. And lots of the people were mean, and most of them were miserable, even the ones with digital watches. Many were increasingly of the opinion that they'd all made a big mistake in coming down from the trees in the first place. And some said that even the trees had been a bad move and that no one should ever have left the oceans. And then one day, nearly 2,000 years after one man had been nailed to a tree for saying how great it would be to be nice to people for a change, a girl, sitting on her own in a small cafe in Rickmansworth, suddenly realized what it was that had been going wrong all this time, and she finally knew how the world could be made a good and happy place. This time it was right, it would work, and no one would have to get nailed to anything. Sadly, however, before she could get to a phone to tell anyone, the earth was unexpectedly demolished to make way for a new hyperspace bypass, and so the idea was lost forever. Meanwhile, Arthur Dent and Ford Prefect have escaped from all that, only to have to contend with all this.
We're trapped now, aren't we?
Yes, we're trapped.
Well, couldn't you think of anything?
Oh, yes, but unfortunately it rather involved being on the other side of the airtight hatchway they've just sealed behind us.
So what happens next?
The hatchway in front of us will open automatically in a moment and we'll shoot out into deep space and asphyxiate in about 30 seconds.
So this is it? We're going to die?
Yes. Except... no. Wait a minute. What's this switch?
What? Where?
No, I was only fooling. We are going to die after all.
You know, it's at times like this when I'm trapped in a Vogon airlock with a man from Beetlejuice and about to die of asphyxiation in deep space that I really wish I'd listened to what my mother told me when I was young.
Why? What did she tell you?
I don't know. I didn't listen.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a truly remarkable book. The introduction starts like this. Space, it says, is big, really big. You just won't believe how vastly, hugely, mind-bogglingly big it is. I mean, you may think it's a long way down the street to the chemist, but that's just peanuts to space. Listen. And so on. After a while, the style settles down a bit and it starts telling you things you actually need to know, like the fact that the fabulously beautiful planet Bethselemon is now so worried about the cumulative erosion caused by 10 billion visiting tourists a year that any net imbalance between the amount you eat and the amount you excrete whilst on the planet is surgically removed from your body weight when you leave. So every time you go to the lavatory there, it is vitally important to get a receipt. In the entry in which it talks about dying of asphyxiation 30 seconds after being thrown out of a spaceship, it goes on to say that what with space being the size it is, the chances of being picked up by another craft within those seconds are 2 to the power of 267,709 to 1 against, which, by staggering coincidence, was also the telephone number of an Islington flat where Arthur once went to a very good party and met a very nice girl whom he totally failed to get off with. Though the planet Earth, the Islington flat, and the telephone have all now been demolished, it is comforting to reflect that they are in some small way commemorated by the fact that 29 seconds later, Ford and Arthur were, in fact, rescued.
Something.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Great idea of mine to find a passing spaceship and get rescued by...
Oh, come on. The chances against it are astronomical.
Don't knock it. It works. Now, where are we?
Well, I hardly like to say this, but it looks like the seafront at South End.
God, I'm relieved to hear you say that.
Why?
Because I thought I must be going mad.
Perhaps you are. Perhaps you only thought I said it.
Well, did you say it or not?
I think so.
Perhaps we're both going mad. Still, nice day for it.
Sunshine,
sea, candy blossom.
Guess we better ask someone what's going on. How about that man over there?
What, the one with the five heads crawling up the wall?
Yes.
Excuse me.
If this is South End, then there's something very odd about it.
You mean the way the sea stays steady as a rock and the buildings keep washing up and down? Yes, I thought that was odd.
2 to the power of 100,000 to 1 against us. Falling.
What was that?
Sounds like a measurement of probability. Or improbability. Improbability?
Everything seems to be melting away. Falling backward. The stars are swirling. A dust bowl. Snow? My legs drifting off into the sunset. My left arm floating away. How am I going to operate my digital watch now? Ford?
Yes?
You're turning into a penguin. Stop it.
2 to the power of 75,000 to 1 against
it,
falling.
Hey, who are you? Where are you? What's going on, and is there any way of stopping it?
Please relax. You are perfectly safe.
That's not the point. The point is that I am now a perfectly safe penguin, and my colleague here is rapidly running out of limbs.
That's all right. I've got them back now.
2 to the power of 50,000 to 1 against and falling.
Admittedly, they're longer than I usually like them. But
isn't there anything you feel you ought to be telling us?
Welcome to the starship Heart of Gold. Please do not be alarmed by anything you see or hear around you. You are bound to feel some initial ill effects as you have been rescued from certain death at an improbability level of 2 to the power of 267,709 to 1 against, possibly much higher. We are now cruising at a level of 2 to the power of 25,000 to 1 against and falling, and we'll be restoring normality as soon as we're sure what is normal anyway. Thank you. 2 to the power of 20,000 to 1 against and falling.
Arthur, this is fantastic. We've been picked up by a ship with the new infinite improbability drive. I mean, this is really incredible, Arthur. Arthur? What's happening?
Ford, there's an infinite number of monkeys outside who want to talk to us about this script for Hamlet they've worked out.
The infinite improbability drive is a wonderful new method of crossing interstellar distances in a few seconds without all that tedious mucking about in hyperspace. The principle of generating small amounts of finite improbability by simply hooking the logic circuits of a Bumbleweenie 57 sub-meson brain to an atomic vector plotter suspended in a strong Brownian motion producer, say a nice hot cup of tea, were of course well understood, and such generators were often used to break the ice at parties by making all the molecules in the hostess's undergarments simultaneously leap 1 foot to the left, in accordance with the theory of indeterminacy. Many respectable physicists said that they weren't going to stand for that sort of thing, partly because it was a debasement of science, but mostly because they didn't get invited to those sort of parties. Another thing they couldn't stand was the perpetual failure they encountered in trying to construct a machine which could generate the infinite improbability field needed to flip a spaceship between the furthest stars, and in the end, they grumpily announced that such a machine was virtually impossible. Then one day, a student, who had been left to sweep up the lab after a particularly unsuccessful party, found himself reasoning this way. If such a machine is a virtual impossibility, then it must logically be a finite improbability. So all I have to do in order to make one is to work out exactly how improbable it is, then feed that figure into the finite improbability generator, give it a fresh cup of really hot tea, and turn it on. He did this, and was rather startled to discover that he had managed to create the long-sought-after infinite improbability generator out of thin air. It startled him even more when, just after he was awarded the Galactic Institute's prize for extreme cleverness, he got lynched by a rampaging mob of respectable physicists who had finally realized that the one thing they really couldn't stand was a smartass.
5 to 1 against and falling. 4 to 1 against and falling. 3 to 1. 2. 1. Probability factor of 1 to 1. Have normality. I repeat, we have normality. Anything you still can't cope with is therefore your own problem. Please relax, you'll be sent for soon.
Who are they, Trillian?
Just a couple of guys who picked up in open space.
Sector ZZ9, plural Z Alpha.
Yeah, well, that's a very sweet thought, Trillian, but do you really think it wise under the circumstances? I mean, here we are, on the run and everything. We've got the police of half the galaxy after us, and we stopped to pick up hitchhikers. Okay, so 10 out of 10 for style, but minus several million for good thinking, eh?
I didn't pick them up. The ship did it all by itself.
What?
Whilst we're in Improbability Drive.
Oh, that's incredible.
No, just very, very improbable. Look, don't worry about the aliens. They're just a couple of guys, I expect. I'll send the robot down to check them out. Hey, Marvin?
I think you ought to know I'm feeling very depressed.
Oh, God.
Well, here's something to occupy you and keep your mind off things.
It won't work. I have an exceptionally large mind.
Marvin?
All right, what do you want me to do?
Go down to number 2 entry bay and bring the 2 aliens up here under surveillance.
Just that?
Yes.
I won't enjoy it.
She's not asking you to enjoy it. Just do it, will you?
All right, I'll do it.
Good. Great. Thank you.
I'm not getting you down at all, am I?
No, no, Marvin. That's just fine, really.
I wouldn't like to think I was getting you down.
No, don't you worry about that. You just act as comes naturally and everything will be fine.
You're sure you don't mind?
No. It's all just part of life.
Life. Don't talk to me about life.
I don't think I can stand that robot much longer, Zaphod.
The Encyclopedia Galactica defines a robot as a mechanical apparatus designed to do the work of a man. The marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation defines a robot as your plastic pal who's fun to be with. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy defines the marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation as a bunch of mindless jerks who'll be the first against the wall when the revolution comes. With a footnote to the effect that the editors would welcome applications from anyone interested in taking over the post of robotics correspondent. Curiously enough, an edition of the Encyclopedia Galactica that fell through a time warp from 1,000 years in the future defined the marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation as a bunch of mindless jerks who were the first against the wall when the revolution came.
I think this ship is brand new, Arthur.
How can you tell? Have you got some exotic device for measuring the age of metal?
No, I just found this sales brochure lying on the floor. The universe can be yours. Yes, look. Sensational new breakthrough in improbability physics. As the ship's drive reaches infinite improbability, it passes through every conceivable point in every conceivable universe almost simultaneously. Mm. You select your own re-entry point. Be the envy of other major governments. This is big league stuff.
It looks a hell of a lot better than that dingy Vogon ship. This is my idea of a spaceship. It's all gleaming white, flashing lights, everything. What happens if I press this button?
I wouldn't.
Oh.
What happened?
A sign lit up saying, please do not press this button again.
They make a big thing of the ship's cybernetics. A new generation of Sirius Cybernetics Corporation robots and computers with the new GPP feature.
GPP? What's that?
It says genuine people personalities.
Sounds ghastly. Thank
you. It is.
What?
Ghastly. It all is absolutely ghastly. Just don't even talk about it. Look at this door. All the doors in this spacecraft have a cheerful and sunny disposition. It is their pleasure to open for you and their satisfaction to close again with the knowledge of a job well done.
Thank you.
Hateful. Come on. I've been ordered to take you up to the bridge. Here I am, brain the size of a planet, and they tell me to take you up to the bridge. Call that job satisfaction, because I don't.
Excuse me, which government owns this ship?
You watch this door. It's about to open again. I can tell by the intolerable air of smugness it suddenly generates.
Thank you.
Come on.
Thank you.
Thank you, the marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation.
Which government owns this ship?
Let's build robots with genuine people personalities, they said. So they tried it out with me. I'm a personality prototype. You can tell, can't you?
Well...
I hate that door. I'm not getting you down, am I?
Which government owns
it? No government owns it. It's been stolen.
Stolen?
Stolen.
Who by?
Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Zaphod Beeblebrox?
Oh, sorry. Did I say something wrong? Pardon me for breathing, which I never do anyway, so I don't know why I bother to say it. Oh, God, I'm so depressed. Here's another of those self-satisfied doors.
Glad to be of service.
Life. Don't talk to me about life.
No one even mentioned it.
Really? Save for Beeblebrox.
And news reports brought to you here on the Sub-Ether Waveband, broadcasting around the galaxy, around the clock. And we'll be saying a big hello to all intelligent life forms everywhere. And to everyone else out there, the secret is to bang the rocks together, guys. And of course, the big news story tonight is the sensational theft of the new Improbability Drive prototype chip by none other than Seyfarth Beeblebrox. And the question everyone's asking is, has the Big Z finally flipped? Beeblebrox, the man who invented the Pan-Galactic Gargle Blaster, ex-confidence trickster, part-time galactic president, once described by Eccentrica Galumbitz as the best bang since the Big One, and recently voted the worst-dressed sentient being in the universe for the 7th time running. Has he got an answer this time? We asked his private brain care specialist, Gag Halfront.
Well, look, Zephod's just this guy, you know?
What'd you turn it off for?
I just thought of something.
Yeah?
We picked those couple of guys up in sector ZZ9 plural Z Alpha. Does that mean anything to you?
On the whole, no.
Let me show it to you on the screen. Right there. It's the same sector you picked me up in.
Hey, right. I don't believe it. How the hell did we come to be there?
Improbability Drive. We pass through every point in the universe. You know that.
Yeah, but picking them up there is just too strange a coincidence. I want to work this out. Computer?
Hi there.
Oh, God.
I want you to know that whatever your problem, I am here to help you solve it.
Look, I think I'll just use a piece of paper.
Sure thing, I understand. If you ever need a...
Shut up.
Okay.
Trillian, listen. The ship picked them up all by itself, right?
Right.
So that already gives us a high improbability factor.
I can work it out for you.
It picked them up in that particular space sector.
Sector ZZ9 plural Z Alpha.
Which gives us another high improbability factor.
Plus, they were not wearing spacesuits, did you think of that?
So, we picked them up during a crucial 30-second period.
I've got a note of that factor here.
So have I.
Put it all together.
And we have a total improbability factor of exactly...
Well, it's pretty vast, but it's not infinite. At what point did we pick them up?
Infinite improbability level.
Yeah. I got a bad feeling about one big whack of improbability still to be accounted for.
Glad to be of service.
I suppose you'll want to see the aliens now. Do you want me to sit in a corner and rust, or just fall apart where I'm standing?
Show them in, please, Marvin.
I'm not staying in the same room with that robot.
Ford, hi, how are you? Glad you could drop in.
Say, Ford, great to see you. You're looking well. The extra arm suits you. Nice ship you've stolen.
You mean you know this guy?
Know him? He's... Oh, Zaphod. This is a friend of mine, Arthur Dent. I saved him when his planet blew up.
Oh, sure. Hi, Arthur. Glad you could make it.
And Arthur, this is my...
We've met.
What?
Oh, have we,
What do you mean you've met? This is Zaphod Beeblebrox from Beetlejuice 5, you know, not bloody Martin Smith from Croydon.
I don't care. We've met, haven't we, Zaphod? Or should I say... Phil.
What?
You'll have to remind me. I have a terrible memory for species. Hey, Ford.
It was at a party 6 months ago.
I rather doubt that.
On Earth. England.
Look.
London. Islington.
Oh, that party.
Say, Ford, you don't mean to say you've been on that miserable little planet as well, do you?
No, of course not. Well, I may just have dropped in briefly. On my way somewhere.
He gate-crashed this fancy dress party, barged up to the girl I was talking to and said, "Hey, doll, is this guy boring you? Why don't you talk to me instead? I'm from a different planet."
Zaphod?
Yes. He only had the two arms and he called himself Phil, but there was
but
absolute...
But you have to admit he did turn out to be from another planet.
What? Good God. It's her, Tricia McMillan.
Improbability sum now complete. And for my next trick,
I'll... Oh, shut up, will you?
Just trying to create a pleasant social atmosphere.
What on earth are you doing here?
Same as you. I hitched a lift. After all, with a degree in maths and another in astrophysics, it was either that or the dole queue again on Monday, wasn't it? Anyway, hi. Nice to see you again.
But this is all impossible.
No, just very, very improbable.
Oh, God. Ford, this is Trillian. Hi. Trillian, this is my semi-cousin Ford, who shares three of the same mothers as me. Hi. Trillian, is this sort of thing going to happen every time we use the infinite improbability drive?
Very probably, I'm afraid.
Zaphod Beeblebrox, this is a very large drink.
Hi there, this is Eddie, your shipboard computer. And I just want to mention here that we are now moving into orbit around the legendary planet of Magrathea. Sorry to interrupt your social evening. Have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
You're tuned to Radio Ace from Imaginary Stations, where Pete Madtone reminds us that radio connects us all.
Outer space man of renown. He has a brand new thing. It's called the Outer Space.
appreciate your support for Imaginary Stations so that we can create programs like Radio Ace here on Shortwave. To find out more about how you can donate or support us, email us at imaginarystations@gmail.com. That's imaginarystations@gmail.com, and help keep us on the airwaves for many months and hopefully years to come.
And now, the Aircheck Factory presents the amazing recorded adventures of Floating Flash Frisbone. Floating Flash Frisbone, this era's most transient broadcast personality. Flash Frisbone, endowed with the super ability to sweep quarter hours with a single one-liner, travels from station to station in a never-ending search for a permanent gig. You'll remember last time, our hero was searching in his briefcase while on the board at WESE Edison 78, an all oldies station in Florida. He's really into the format of all old 78 RPM records, but just didn't feel right about the station manager's mandate about not being able to use his golden tones on the air until his voice matures, maybe another 40 years. As we join Flash this month, he seems to have found what he's been looking for.
Here it is! Oh, boy, my Vitatone 78! Look at that, it's never even been played. I knew when I bought this at that rummage sale it would really come in handy someday, but I sure didn't know when. Oh, boy, all I gotta do is cue it up and play it, and then it's really my show! Right after the jingle, here we go! Flash Frisbone's on the air!
And Flash punches in the beeswax cylinder that has the station's jingle on it.
Edison 78!
And to the strains of his own personal copy of the Cheerfulness Boys doing Maggie's Flivver, Flash bounces up and down with the joy of making mid-mornings truly his own shift. Flash has never been happier until suddenly he hears the sound of the station intercom, the portent of doom.
Control room.
Frisbone?
Yes, Mr. Janarian.
What's that Cheerfulness Boys cut doing on the air? We pulled that from the playlist last week.
Well, it's my own record, and I wanted to,
I see.
I wanted to,
Frisbone?
Yeah?
Come to my office, please.
Okay.
It's an all-too-familiar scene next, as Flash is in the general manager's office. Let's listen.
I'm making my own show, but gee, Mr. Janarian, honest, that won't happen again. I love the format. I like the people. Victor and me are going out for tea after my shift, and you can't fire me. You just can't.
Now listen, Flash.
Flash.
Whatever. Edison 78 just isn't the station for you.
It is, too. I really love it here.
I know. I appreciate your enthusiasm, but...
I'm doing real
it's
good.
It's just not gonna work.
Come on, give me a chance.
Look.
You're gonna fire me?
No, I'm not gonna fire you.
Oh.
We have a sister station up in Canada.
Canada?
Right.
I just got back from there.
Well, then you should enjoy the country up there.
It's cold up there.
They've got a nice format.
You mean the same thing as here?
No, it's not the same as ours.
Oh, what kind of format is it?
Well, they've got a WAP format.
A WAP format? Hey, look, just because my last name is really Frisbeone.
Oh, I thought it says here your last name is Arnold.
That was another episode. Hey, never mind. Listen, I'm not taking no ethnic slurs. You ain't gonna give me none of that stuff. If they play Italian music, you just can't go calling no WAP station.
Flash.
I mean, really.
Flash, now listen. WOP, W-O-P, it's an abbreviation.
Abbreviation?
Right. It means weather-oriented pop.
What the heck is that?
That's their format.
Why?
It's something that Nimbus Columbo, their program director, dreamed up. Now look, you can't stay here. We'll even pay the plane flight to get you up to Canada.
I don't know.
I like you, Flash.
Yeah, but you know,
maybe something. The scene shifts now to Bim Bam Manitoba in the studios of High Low 2718. The program director, Nimbus Columbo, is speaking.
It's a certain bet that disco is dead. Now, Frisbone, tell me, what do people put the radio on for in the morning?
Well, news and...
News and?
weather.
Right, you're hired. We just got our new call sign, and we're going to change formats at 6 o'clock this evening. Now, you can have the evening shift and lead off the new format.
Oh, boy, evening, my favorite shift.
Well, if you like it that much, I'll give you all night shift, too. You can work them both until we hire somebody else.
I don't know about that. Hey, listen, what are we going to be doing here anyway?
Well, look, like I said, disco is dead. We're dumping the disco format at 6 o'clock tonight. I really got worried when I read in the Aircheck Factory newsletter that disco was dying in Winnipeg.
Dying?
Right. And if it'll do that in a big city like Winnipeg, well, then here in Bim Bam, we're in trouble. Right?
Well, yeah, I guess so. You know, it also went in Detroit and...
Now you got the picture, Frisbone. I mean, disco is dying. You're definitely a man for the job. Now, listen, you know, Studio B, you never heard of them doing no disco jingles, did you?
Well,
Right. Obviously, what the country needs is a format to capture the people's imagination.
Like what?
To pick up where disco left off. Now, I knew when I brought in that music director from Chappaquiddick that we'd be sunk. He insisted that disco's big, and he wanted us to stay with disco. I mean, now look, here in Bim Bam, all you got's one truck stop and a jukebox. There's nothing heavier on that jukebox than Johnny Paycheck.
Yeah.
Country's big, but there's already a big country station in the market, so we gotta do something different.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotta give the listener music while giving them what they really want to hear.
Weather?
Right. Weather and music. It's a format I devised myself. I call it WOP, weather-oriented pop.
I heard that.
Right. I've brought in the weather wires from all over the world. Now, Frisbone, we've revamped the record library. This is going to be a hit. You're going to be reading about this for years to come.
And I get to start it off?
That's right, Frisbone. You're going to go down in the history books. At 6 o'clock tonight, we'll have this town dancing up a storm while keeping them informed with exactly what they like. Weather.
Well, I don't know if it's going to work or anything, you know.
Now,
I mean...
look, Frisbone, no doubts. This is going to be a hit. I guarantee. You just wait. 6 o'clock tonight, Bim Bam is going to be dancing up a storm.
Right.
Well, does this mean Flash starts a new career? And what about Elma Gluck? Join us next month for another thrill-a-minute episode of Morning Flash Radio Ace. The amazing recorded adventures of Flash Frisbone are produced exclusively for the Aircheck Factory at the facilities of Studio B in Marquette, Michigan.
Radio Ace.
Once again, to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
From Fair Oaks, California, gateway to Sacramento, Tate Bloom writes, Dear Dr. Science, why does my cassette player eat my tapes? What could I feed it as a substitute?
Your cassette player is hungry. So many people have this problem because they never bothered to read the instruction manual that came with their tape player when they bought it. You may recall some mention of head cleaning solution. Well, this is just another term for tape player food. If you don't feed the heads, they'll eat your tape. It's that simple. The food they like best is 90% rubbing alcohol. The normal 70% solution you buy at the neighborhood drugstore just won't cut the mustard. You'll end up with a rusty-headed, hungry tape player that'll still eat your tapes. Hope I've answered your question.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.